Hi, Ham Radio listeners. It's Heidi Holton. I know you've been wondering, where is Ham Radio Cooking with Amy Thielen? We had funding for a six-week run that you got to hear last spring, and it is available right now still on all podcast platforms and on our website, kexc.org. You will get a couple of orders of Ham Radio before the end of this year. We'll bring you a couple of the programs. And as far as the future of Ham Radio, due to federal funding cuts, state funding cuts, we're looking for other sources out there. It may take a little bit longer, but we are dedicated to bringing you this plate of ham on the radio and on the podcast that helps you connect to other people through your stories of your relatives, of your mix-ups in your kitchen. We love it, and we hope you do as well. That is the sausage behind what happens when producing Ham Radio. But I don't know about you. I miss hearing from Amy Thielen. I miss the conversations about food that connect us all. That's why we reached out to Amy and we wanted to have some more conversations. You get a little extra ham today in your order. Amy joined us on the Wednesday morning show. Me and co-host Andrew DeZingle got into kind of a tiff about some really important matters. Sloppy Joes. Cheese or no cheese? I am team no cheese. Andrew enjoys the cheese on the Sloppy Joe. Amy came in and weighed in on her decision on it. And then we talked more about the fall, what she's cooking, the giant cabbages from her garden, as well as apple cider, apple syrup, and a lot more. We got stuff cooking still for Ham Radio, don't worry. Until then, here's a little special side order.
I enjoy the finer things, champagne and diamond rings, dinner parties never ending. Gazing out on Central Park, canapes and caviar, wondering where you are. It's all fine.
Now, I wasn't sure going in today that Sloppy Joe would be a topic of conversation.
You weren't sure, but you thought it might be.
I always think it's a possibility. But now we have someone who can really weigh in on the debate going on throughout this morning show. We have a very special guest. Joining us is Amy Thielen.
You know her from her cookbooks, from Ham Radio, and we're glad to have you back in the studio.
So good to be
Feels
here.
Feels like 2 seconds ago, and yet it was months ago. But
I know.
Here's Amy to talk about this. So let's give you the little background. First, we've got a couple of new texts that came in about it and see. We heard from someone who said, OMC Smokehouse in Duluth has a lentils and quinoa sloppy joe, so spicy with pickled onions, jalapenos, and no cheese. Highly recommend for a veggie option. So how do we describe our debate that has happened here that's driven a wedge between you and me, Andrew? Let's be honest. Is
what
cheese or no cheese in the sloppy joe has been the big controversy.
What kind of cheese would you put in the sloppy joe?
You put cheddar.
Really? Does it melt?
Sometimes, if it's hot enough.
Oh, are you garnishing it on the top with cheddar?
No, I just put a slice on top of it and then kind of let it heat up, and then it kind of like gets a little melty in there.
Okay.
See, it seemed wrong to me. It just sort of,
I mean,
because a sloppy joe is sort of a sauce, for some reason, like a red sauce, it just seemed weird, which makes no sense because you put cheese on a red sauce.
I think you're kind of verging toward chili without beans territory with the cheese, personally.
Which is my dream chili without the beans.
Maybe what you have devised is a hybrid.
Yeah,
I have never put cheese into or on a sloppy joe, but hey, I'm not going to judge.
Okay. Well, people feel strongly about it, and I probably shouldn't have just jumped the gun and saying it was wrong. It's certainly not wrong.
Yeah, we heard.
No, there's nothing wrong. There's no wrong answers here.
Seems weird.
I really, you know, I remember growing up with sloppy joes, but not necessarily at my mom's house. She didn't really make that, and so that was like something I would get at other people's houses, or like at the scoop dinner, like hockey scoop dinners.
Oh, okay.
Do you know a scoop dinner?
No.
No.
Oh, so a fundraiser at, say, like the Legion or something. We would, my brothers were in hockey, and there's always fundraising for hockey. And so a scoop dinner is just everybody bringing in things that are scoopable, like, you know, hot dish or sloppy joes or macaroni salad. And you have a ice cream scoop. It's like a lunch lady sort of.
Sure.
It's not really that sexy or appealing as a fundraiser, but that's what it was. It was the scoop dinner, and there were definitely sloppy joes at the scoop dinner, because sloppy joes, I feel like they should be thick enough to be scooped like that.
Yeah.
Onto the bun in a mound, like an ice cream size.
That was definitely what our school would do, is the ice cream scooper to scoop it on our buns.
You don't want a soggy bun.
I mean, it can be a little loose, but not.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I suppose it's the timing, right? I mean, you need to eat it pretty quickly after it's scooped. Yeah. You don't let it sit or anything.
I mean, honestly, I prefer in that category of sandwich, the made right without ketchup, because I'm not a huge ketchup fan.
Oh. Mm. So you probably don't have ketchup on your hot dogs either?
I don't.
You do mustard?
Yeah.
Relish?
Mm. Sauerkraut. Oh. I mean, so German.
Wow. Yeah, we also heard from Suzanne.
Yes, Suzanne from Virginia. We always have cheese on our sloppy joes. I make homemade sloppy joes with a can of tomato soup, mustard, ketchup, and brown sugar. Longtime supporter from state of Virginia. Thank you, Suzanne. And we also heard from another person. Sloppy joes are the ultimate birthday party food for kids' birthday parties.
And that is true.
We also got another one. Think of a sloppy joe with cheese as a cheese sandwich with a meat sauce.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Oops, that was out loud. I'm so sorry.
You did say that. It came out kind of a whimper. No.
I don't know. It just got into that. But yeah, you don't. Are there any made right opportunities around northern Minnesota? I believe the Barn in Brainerd still serves made rights downtown. They have a breakfast.
Yeah. Not even that long ago in Detroit Lakes, there was kind of a made right.
Yeah,
place.
Where you scoop the meat out of the counter kind
of
thing.
Well, no, they make cooking it for you, but it was really good. Okay. I loved it. Yeah. You know, speaking of the Range or Duluth, which is not the Range, but my friend Bruce Engebretson, friend of Ham Radio, he told me about a sandwich that he's from Grand Marais or has relatives there.
Right.
I don't know exactly. Is it the Grand Marais? An area around there. Eveleth, maybe? Or where they made a sandwich called
Hovland.
The South...
Hovland, I think
South
he said.
American?
Oh.
Have you heard of this?
No.
I should look it up. But what it is it's kind of... It's a sloppy Joe-ish thing.
Okay.
But more like... it has olives. It has... vegetables, so like a sofrito, like onion, pepper, tomato, you know, celery, and then a little bit of tomato, and then meat, and it's a little bit spicy, but not really spicy,
right?
And then olives, and it's kind of more of like a picadillo from South America, and they make it. It was all best recipes invented in a bar,
okay,
by a bar owner to, you know, keep people drinking or heal them as they drink.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a thick meat mixture.
Hmm.
So it's definitely in the realm or the family of sloppy joes and made right. But so if anybody knows about that, please call in. need to know more.
You can text us 218-326-1234. Let's talk a little bit about, we're into the fall. So I haven't seen you since I'm sure you've had a very busy gardening season. Mm-hmm. What's happening in the kitchen when it comes to the garden, and what have you kind of put up for preserves or frozen or done any of that?
Yeah, this year was great for basically everything. My tomatoes were good. My beans were good. Cabbages were giant.
Wow.
Peppers were big. Eggplant even. And then apples. You and I were talking about that because I know you grow a lot of fruit. We had so many apples.
Yeah, we did too.
I mean, just bonkers. And my father-in-law he also has a lot of apples and pears and stuff like that. And so he bought this really nice apple press.
Oh. I want to hear about this.
We made our own. Yeah.
Out of weird plastic buckets. And
that's impressive.
A whole wooden, very, very, I'll have to take photos and send it to you. But anyway, tell me about the press.
Well, so he bit the bullet and bought this thing, and it's like very nice. Mm-hmm. And so we went over with all of our bushels and bushels of apples and pressed it all. And so we got 36 quarts of apple cider. And that filled up one of our two top-loading deep freezers.
So tell me about how you're putting in, what's the process before you press them, or is there no process, just full apples going in?
No, just plain. So you just wash them and press them, and then each, different trees, different kinds of apples taste different.
Yeah.
And so we were labeling those, like this is State Fair cider.
Yeah, we had some
State Fair. A Honeycrisp we grow. Mm-hmm. That was very sweet. I fermented some on the counter you can
make some Applejack there?
Just hard cider.
Okay.
Which I'm sure you could do in a much more precise and better way. But I just put one of those like airlocks on it and just let it sit, and it turned into something that is, I think, alcoholic.
Yeah.
We don't know.
I did that one year, and I could kind of feel the effects. So I'm like, I think this is a little alcoholic here.
But we don't really know how much.
So, this is something I think we probably go too far in our processing, because we kind of made the whole thing up. We didn't ask anybody. We didn't look it up. And Tom made the whole cider press thing that we do.
It
works great. Like, it looks like a small guillotine that's in our kitchen right now and stays there for months. It seems like, because we've processed the early apples. We just picked all the Honeycrisp last night, and we'll eat a lot of those, but and give them to people, but we'll also make some cider out of those. But so we've been not just washing them, but we sometimes core them or take the bottom and the top out. That's our process of I do that part, and then we put it in the food processor. Then we put it in this bag, sort of mesh bag that goes in the thing. We stopped being as precise on whether there were seeds in there, because the first year we did it, we were spent way too much time thinking we can't have this in here, but we could probably just plunk it in, huh?
Well, I think that people who do make a lot of cider, just whole washed apples,
right?
I don't know that you don't want leaves,
yeah. Right. Or dirt. Yeah, I mean, you got to clean it off.
But. Or apples that have any holes in them, I take those out. I just chuck those in the wood.
Yeah.
In the woods.
Yeah. Yeah. There were so many chucked last night, I'm telling you. With so many. Bees are enjoying their apples, though, so that's good.
Yeah.
Right?
So what do you do with your cider? How much did you get this year? How much do you think you'll get?
We have a lot. I don't know. We filled up our freezer. We give it to people. People have come to know us as fancy bottle people, so when they have extra bottles, they give them to us, so then we kind of do this trade-off. And if you get cider, I should have brought you some today, but if you get some, then
I should have brought you some today.
What about Andrew here?
What about Andrew?
We're just blocking him off due to the Sloppy Joe incident that happened. But anyway, I don't know. It lasts us for a long time. We just drink it and we share it with family. Like, if special occasions. Tom's favorite thing is to take it out of the freezer, and when it's almost like an apple cider slush.
Oh, yum.
Wow, is that good. Yeah.
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 So when we filled up the one freezer with just juice, I knew we had kind of a problem. So then I was like, okay, what are we doing now? And past that point, I started reducing it.
Oh, okay.
And so I would take, gallons of cider and just put it in my largest, widest pot and just bring it down slowly over time, which really smelled good that day. The whole house, great. And then it got darker and thicker. And when the bubbles started to get a little bit big, I cut the heat, let it chill. And it was kind of just a syrup, like a light, pourable. But that is the stuff. I started making it because there's this recipe I always wanted to make, and it's shaker. The shakers, right?
Yes.
The sect of people who kind of, I don't know if they're really
Quakers,
around.
Quakers, Shakers, Amish, kind of. I mean, not.
They were non-procreating, the Shakers, so.
Oh, okay.
I think it's just a matter of recruitment now, right? Anyway, their cookbooks are really cool.
Okay.
So they're kind of known for the way that they cook is really simple and lots of fresh herbs and make everything yourself. But something about their vibe was, very New England-y. Mm-hmm. And so they would use that reduced apple cider as a syrup And they would use it as a sweetener in the same way that around here people use maple syrup.
Oh, sure.
And so they would, there's one recipe I saw and then tinkered with and made up. And it's like you pour some of that apple cider syrup into a baking dish, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you drop like a scone mixture or stirred biscuit mixture on top of that and bake it. It's really good.
Huh. Wow.
I should have brought Andrew that.
Yeah, no kidding. The syrup. I do make a, it's a recipe that's like Amish apple fritter bread kind of a thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good.
That sounds like, good.
You kind of have layers of the bread. I mean, it's really not a bread. It's basically a cake in a bread pan. But,
well, what is the difference?
Right. We just do layers of, you know, the dough, then the, you know, I do like 3-4 layers and almost, you know, created sort of made it more my own of like I'm almost stir frying the apples before I put them in there with syrup that we collect too.
Cinnamon?
And, yeah.
Like big lines of cinnamon?
Yes. Yeah. Totally
Yum.
Good. Anyway.
That sounds great.
If you have a question for Amy, you can text us at 218-326-1234.
So, Amy, around this time of year, it's always been like a meme on like Instagram or Twitter and stuff of people saying like, as soon as that first leaf falls, I'm shifting into soup mode. Are you that type of person where it's like you are thinking about soups already?
Yes. Yes. I've already made some.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, really for me, like the soup time is once we start making fires in the house, in the wood stove, because I have that cooktop.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's like you have to make soup because what you're wasting heat if you're not making soup, you know? So I cook beans, you know, all day, like a dry bean. And then I made...
I like that he's not agreeing. He's going, oh, beans all day. Okay.
Well, I work at home. It's a, you know, so yeah, I have no excuse. And then I make like a vegetable soup, kind of a minestrone, but I'd like to put, again, sauerkraut in that.
Mm.
And then some pork, but a little bit spicy, a little bit sour. It's really good.
You've been making sauerkraut then?
I didn't this year.
Okay.
Even though I had this giant cabbage, I don't know. I still have a bunch of cabbage. I can. Cabbage are giant.
We got a question coming in from my house of what's the new apple press? Do you know how else to describe it? The one that you went to?
You know, I can look it up.
Okay, we'll get that. We'll get that to Tom.
I'll get that to you.
Yeah. We'd love to hear from you today, 218-326-1234. Also want to put a thank you out. Folks, continue to support us and donate, especially after the loss of federal funding. We just heard from Louise from Minneapolis, making sure that KAXE, she said thanks for letting me stream friendly voices from up north.
Oh.
Thanks for being with us, Louise. We sure appreciate that. You can text the word donate to 218-326-1234.
One thing I had this past weekend that I've never tried before was lob. I went to a Laotian restaurant.
Oh, cool.
And
where was that?
It was in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the restaurant off the top of my head right now.
Yeah.
What's lob?
It's very spicy. I know that.
Yeah. It's like... technically, I guess, a salad, but it's a ground meat salad. So it's cooked and then tossed with, like, lime juice and fish sauce and chili.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And then you wrap it in, like, a little leaf, and then you eat it like a wrap.
It's really yummy. What kind did you have?
We had the chicken one.
Yeah, that's good.
And it was tasty, but, man, I went through 13... glasses of water.
Oh, wow.
It was really hot.
Yeah.
It can be really hot. Yeah.
So, Amy, you mentioned this vegetable soup that you like to make.
Uh-huh.
How do you make a soup tasty and not, you know, if you're spending where you can taste the individual vegetables? I know that sounds weird. But
No, not at all.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Okay. So, actually, I have a lot of theories about this.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times people, when you put raw cut vegetable into water or broth or your stock or whatever, sometimes like carrots and onions, they don't taste good.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to saute them first.
Okay.
And a lot of times, actually, the best way to do it is to use a different sized vessel or pot. So I use like a large saute pan
mm-hmm.
to make soup. which sounds very odd. Oh. But let's say you're going to, you know, you saute your onion and then you put the carrot and the celery and then whatever else, your pepper, your cabbage, mm-hmm. what have you. But they all get a little bit of that thyme in the fat
okay.
and salt, and they kind of retain their character. They, you know, you give them just a little toast. I'm not saying you have to cook them to a mush or anything.
Right.
But you saute them and then you add your liquid.
Okay.
You know, and if you were using like bacon or sausage first in the soup, you do that first, take the meat out, and then saute the vegetables in that
sure.
pork fat.
So it's about the steps and seasoning, no doubt,
mm-hmm.
matters.
Yeah, seasoning like a little bit all the way through,
right?
You know, as you go, rather than, I mean, this is a pet peeve of mine, is that as a recipe developer myself, oh, it's a lot easier just to tell somebody to put all the salt in at one point. Do you know what I mean? From
yeah.
like an editorial standpoint?
Yeah.
But from a cooking standpoint, it makes a lot more sense to, let's say you're going to use a half to one teaspoon of salt for a big pot of soup or whatever, more, I don't know, but a little bit at a time so that each
yeah.
part of it gets seasoned. So
right. I think I became a better cook when I realized that, like, you know, there's a while where people were kind of talking a lot about low sodium or whatever, so mm-hmm. I kind of wasn't cooking much with salt. I didn't realize this is not to make something salty. This is to make yeah. the flavor of something come out.
So it tastes like itself.
Yes.
Because if you look at like a can of beans,
mm-hmm.
the sodium level for some of these is through the roof. Like it's very, very high.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for recipes and ways of cooking that where you're adding a can of this or a can of that, at any point, you hardly add a lot of salt because there's so much sodium in a can of beans.
Okay.
You know?
Yep.
Like, a lot. And so for you to make some beans that have even near enough that you'd use, like, probably 1 to 2 teaspoons.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
There is a pizza restaurant that has... It was like the first time I had a veggie pizza where I just loved it. And it was uh-huh. because you could taste each vegetable. It felt like other pizzas I had, veggie yeah. pizzas, were sort of like just the mush, like a soup would be if you just piled it all in there.
Uh-huh.
And it's like the best thing ever. Because like, oh, I can taste the green pepper. I can taste, you know, it's like you can just.
Maybe it was like roasted at high heat.
Yeah, I bet
you
it
know?
Was. Before it went on the pizza
or
something.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
And not, cool. and yes, it must have been because I also, what could be a problem with veggie pizza is it's too wet because they, you know, they mm-hmm. haven't gotten the moistness out of the vegetables before it went on there or something. So
yeah.
it made it really wet. I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. I don't want a soggy pizza.
No, or a soggy sloppy Joe bun.
What's wrong with a soggy sloppy Joe bun?
No, I think what you're saying is like, it's interesting actually because, you know, vegetables, they do kind of sweat out, they say sweat mm-hmm. out mm-hmm. liquid as they cook. So you got to, you know,
right.
use that to your advantage instead of a disadvantage.
Right. Okay, so we're almost out of time. We'll be bringing you Headwaters with Kari Hedlund. She'll be taking over. Give us a little idea of something, as Andrew asked you about kind of fall, like what would be something good and warm to be cooking in the next few weeks? That's so general, but what might you be cooking that's an easy mm-hmm. dish?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you.
I'm asking the audience, too. So I made something the other day that was really good. I have these huge cabbages, right? They're almost 2 feet tall, this one.
Wow.
It's the size of it. It's a cone shape. So basically think like Saturday Night Live cone heads.
Yeah.
Like really that size. That's how big it is. It's comical. And when I cut it and I brought it to the kitchen and I cut it in half and I was like, laughing because it's so like all this water is kind of pouring out of it and I had to put it on the sheet tray. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like butchering this cabbage. I feel like I'm like cutting up a roast or something. But what I did with one of them was I started to take the leaves off and then I blanched some of them off, you know, and I made this big meat pie with pork inside.
Oh.
So like, okay, you take a springform pan, mm-hmm. you know, a cake pan with mm-hmm. the removable bottom or side, and lined it with the blanched cabbage, and then I put pork mixture, like a meatloaf mixture,
yeah,
but with pork in that pat down, and then more cabbage, and then it
wow.
got, and then butter, and then the whole thing got brown. I mean, it was really rich.
So it didn't actually have like a crust. The crust was the cabbage.
So, you know, like a cabbage roll.
Yeah.
But one giant one.
Oh, nice. Huh. That's a great tip. We just heard from Joni. She wanted to know, can anything be done with corky carrots? Stalk? Question mark.
Oh.
I don't.
I know what she means.
They've gone too far?
Well, no, they. I don't know what causes a corky carrot, but I know what she means, like where the core is kind of firm or tough. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I used to work with a chef, and he was from Europe, and I remember one of my early cooking memories was him showing me how to wedge his knife into that, you know, by the core, and just he popped them out. It was just like, thook, thook, thook. It was really beautiful. It's like it leaves like a carrot canoe.
Right.
I mean, if you have time, you know.
Pop that out.
Might want to do that. But otherwise, I think you just cook them more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you could cut around it.
Sure.
You know, and make like dice, and then the cores would make great stock or juice.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, we are out of time. Kari Hedlund's coming up with Headwaters. Do want to let you know there will be some more ham radio broadcasts coming to you. Mm-hmm. We are working hard behind the scenes. Stay tuned. But if you haven't yet caught ham radio, you can catch on any podcast platform or check out more information on it at kaxe.org. Amy, so good to talk to you.
Oh,
and see
Heidi,
you.
So good to see you and Andrew too.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's just fine, but you know how I lie.